Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Good morning and welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this show is where we discuss and try to simplify all aspects of spirituality. Today's episode is titled Interviewed by God and is about a woman's search for her inner awakening. Our guest today is Beth Banning, a best-selling author, inspirational speaker, and spiritual catalyst who lives in California with her husband, their cat, and their 6-pound poodle. She has published numerous books, including A Journey to Freedom, the Meditation for Life series, and Interviewed by God, which I read and enjoyed. In addition, Beth has co-authored several consciousness-shifting seminars that serve as a catalyst for participants to emerge with a whole new way of relating to themselves and to their world, which helps them experience greater success in the most meaningful areas of their lives. Beth Banning, welcome to the show, Beth.
Thank you. How are you this morning?
I'm very good, and I hope you are too, out there nice and bright and early. I don't know how bright it is, but it's early on the West Coast.
Not bright, but early.
Yeah, there you go. You know, I read Interviewed by God, and I found it very entertaining. And I liked your concept of you being interviewed by God. But, you know, towards the end of the book, you interviewed God, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. And I want to get into that part of it as well a little bit later on. But let's start out by talking about how you got started. You spent your life looking for something. What were you looking for?
What was I looking for? You know, it's funny because I really wasn't looking for something. I didn't start my life out looking for something. You know, my story starts probably like so many of the people listening. I didn't know what I was seeking. And I didn't know what I was seeking was right here within me. I didn't know, you know, I didn't trust myself. You know, you read in the book, you know, I started out, I was pretty, a nervous kid, and there was a lot going on with me. So I learned not to trust myself, and I didn't have a clue how to connect with, like, what we were brought in to connect with, my own inner guidance. And at that point, you know, really when I started out, even before I wrote the book and kind of in my late teens, I didn't know there was such a thing as inner guidance. Like most of us, I truly believe, unless we kind of are in the spiritual realm and the New Age realm, we don't even know there is something called inner guidance because we're kind of taught out of it. And really, at that point, all I knew that I wanted was to be happier. And the other thing I knew is that there was something missing. There was like something wasn't quite right, like with me or the world or the people around me. So what I know now that I didn't know then is that there was always this underlying like agitation, and I wanted it gone. That's really what I knew.
You know, I think that's really common. I think people don't know what they're searching for. They feel there's something wrong. They're not happy about some aspect of their life, maybe a lot of aspects of their life. Mm-hmm. And they just start looking around. You know, and I think you're absolutely right. You don't need to know where you're going in your search. You just need to start looking around and looking for other things.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, even before I started looking around, you know, we're always looking because we're human beings and we're kind of curious. That's the nature of us. And at the same time, it's funny because I've met along my journey, there have been people that are searchers. Do you know what I mean?
I do indeed.
They know they're searching for something and they lean in a very particular direction and they start looking for it. But I really didn't. I really didn't. It was like I call myself now a finder instead of a searcher, because it just kind of shows up and hits me, you know, rather than me going
looking for it. That's very good. Well, how to get started? What's the first step a person should take to experience, better peace and happiness in their life?
Oh my gosh. You know, it's funny because most people are only, like, if they're searching, they're only, and most of it's unconscious, they're searching to be comfortable and avoiding being uncomfortable. And I'm willing at this point to be uncomfortable. And I think that's part of my success and my ability to enjoy my life as much as I am now. Because I'm willing to be uncomfortable. And many people try finding their peace and happiness by starting with a spiritual solution. Like a minute ago, I said, you know, they know they're searching for something and they see spirituality as their path. And they jump right in wholeheartedly. But the problem is that it doesn't always help to the degree that they're looking for. They think it's not working because they're not doing it right or they need to do more. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
So they go and they, you know, and so many things are so superficial that they, you know, go and they see people dressed in white or purple and they go out and buy the right candles and they, you know, go, okay, I need to look deeply and commune with people in their eyes, and they learn mantras, and they think that, you know, because of what they hear, they should never get angry, and they're always supposed to be loving and compassionate. And if they're spiritual people, that they'll do these things and they'll be immune to, you know, material things. And then they're devastated because they go home and they do the same stuff that they've always done. And then, this is the crazy part, they go and beat themselves up because they believe they should be more spiritual. But this isn't spiritual. This is really nuts, you know? I mean, it's just, it blows my mind, you know? Yeah. So they end up being, like, totally exhausted. And really what that is, and I know, you know, because of what you're into, what happens is it becomes spiritual bypass.
Spiritual bypass.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Well, spiritual bypass is really using spirituality as a way to ignore the rest of themselves. And because it's one thing to find the peace and happiness like on your meditation mat or in a yoga class or even in a church in you know, sitting in the pew listening. And it's another to take that peace with you when you leave.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Now, interacting with others, I found to be a big part of your book. So let's talk about that a little bit. One of the messages from your book is to stop judging others. I liked it when you said that when we get frustrated with people, we are really simply seeing a reflection or a mirror image of some negative aspect of ourself in that person, and we don't like it. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, this is just one piece of, you know, saying stop judging people. I mean, that's a huge piece. And, you know, so many people that have gotten into the world of spirituality or even have gotten present to themselves really get that judging someone else out there isn't serving of themselves or the other person. And there is this aspect of judgment that because what we're doing is looking to hide from these beliefs about ourselves, that when we see that aspect of ourselves in someone else, it terrifies us because we don't want to admit that that is in us. And if we can look at that other person and go, they are this, you know, they are irritating or pushy or controlling or selfish, then we can say, but then we're okay. if that person is selfish, then I'm okay. There's nothing wrong with me. It's their problem. They're selfish. And so one aspect of judging and one way to become more compassionate, again, so many people, again, in this whole realm, when they get into the realm of spirituality and there's this whole aspect of stop judging others, then they start judging themselves. They start beating themselves up because now they're judging someone. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, oh, I absolutely know what you're saying.
It becomes so nuts. So really, I like taking the labels off as much as I can and getting present to the fact that we're really all the same, and that every single person you see, no matter what they're doing or what they're saying, that they are trying to meet some need or experience something they value, and that they are doing the best that they can in order to do that. So those are the three things to keep in mind when you're attempting to shift a very deeply ingrained pattern of judging what's outside of you. Because that's really what we're taught from a very young age, is to judge, you know, the rightness and wrongness of everything that's going on in the world outside ourselves.
Right. We live in a society that likes to judge everything. And of course, we judge ourselves, and we judge others, and if we don't really, I don't think, understand the negative impact that it has on us, and it eats away at us when we judge other people and judge ourselves, and I don't think we recognize that. It's just kind of second nature.
Yeah, it becomes exactly because we're taught it from the time we are born, really.
Yeah, exactly. Now, all too often, we're quick to take offense when we feel slighted, and I liked it when you said that people say, what people say and do is really about them, not us, and we have a tendency to take things personally instead of just accepting people for what they are. I suspect that most of the insults we take affront to the perpetrator, never realized what they were saying in the first place. Any thoughts on that?
Well, my first thought and something else that's so deeply ingrained in us, because again, we're taught this, and I want to say this with the caveat of be gentle. I mean, the first thing is to be gentle with yourself, because this pattern of judging and taking things personally and looking at the person out there as the enemy, really, I mean, we're really in a paradigm of us against them. And it doesn't matter if that them is your mother, your spouse, your child, your neighbor, because as soon as we get uncomfortable, we're looking for a them. So that, again, it's really the same thing I was just talking about, is that we separate ourselves. So when we do that, we can't help but feeling, like that person out there is the perpetrator. So again, if we can drop those kinds of labels firstly, before anything else, and just keep coming back to, even though, what that person, whoever it is, when they say something that triggers us, that feels so uncomfortable, that hurts, then the very first place to go is within. Why did that hurt?
Yeah.
Because again, there could be 10 people in the room, and this is why I love this story. Demonstration. There can be 10 people in the same room, and a person can say something, and if the people don't start talking and you ask them separately what that person meant by that, you'll get 10 different answers. So it's not like if someone says something, it means the exact same thing to you, or it would hurt the same way as the person standing right next to you.
Right. It's all in how you interpret it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you talked a lot about energy in the book, and I found it quite interesting. And you had what you referred to, and I guess what is known as Kundalini energy experiences.
Mm-hmm.
What are those? Can you explain those to people?
Wow. Yeah, I wish I could explain it in the way that I experienced it, but there are no words that will do that. So I will do the best I can
best
with words.
Right.
With words, you know, they don't quite do the trick. But
right.
So the idea of Kundalini energy, and again, I learned this after I experienced it because I experienced it without knowing what it was. So I had to go and quickly research it to go, what the heck was that? There are people who for years try to experience it, so they're preparing themselves, which is probably a much better idea. But this just kind of spontaneously happened to me. So the idea is that there is an energy that lives within all of us that I believe before, eons of training these kinds of connections out of us were a natural kind of day-to-day experience. Kundalini energy is the life force that moves through us, that or would move through us naturally if we didn't block it off. And again, it's not a conscious blocking off. But, in simple terms, it's just a life force that moves. And what
is this like chi? The Asian energy that you for acupuncture and such, is that's the same force, or is this something?
I wish I was a scholar, and I'm not, and I really don't have we could probably get people on here that it could explain the details of it. I didn't research it enough. Again, I'm not,
okay.
I'm really truly not a searcher, so I didn't get it like in a scholarly way. So I can't really answer your question specifically,
okay.
But the information I got is that it is a life force. So, but chi, I think, moves through you all the time, whether you ask for it or not. It is
right.
Just the energy that moves through your body. And this is something a little different. And in my experience of it, which was fascinating on so many levels, like intellectually and phenomenal in an experiential sense, is that when this energy arose in me, there was this almost violent shaking and moving the first couple of times. And now it's this much more subtle energy that gives me this, I'm trying to find a word for it, gives me like it's almost like a supercharged ability to feel. I don't know if that's explaining it, but what I know or what I've determined from the research I have done is the more violent, and I say violent not in a term and not as painful, but just intense. Mm-hmm. So there was intense kind of shaking and moving in my body, and what that was and why I don't experience it the same way now is that it was a clearing of the pathways. So the energy runs up and down your spine when it's in movement, when it's awakened, they call it. And until it's able to flow naturally, which is easily, that there is this more intense, more violent movement in your body to open those pathways, which I believe would be called your chakra area.
Yeah. Is this something that people should look forward to or say, I think I'll just avoid this whole experience?
Oh my gosh. Well, don't avoid it, because what comes with it and from it is extraordinary.
Okay.
My hope is that there will be more and more people just supporting people through it. I don't love the idea of that there's a teacher that knows the way to experience it, because we're all so individual that, we're all going to experience these things differently. You know, okay. That's one of the things I want. But no, don't avoid it. And, you know, if you're looking for it, there are things you can look on the internet. They're really my, what I really come to know for myself is that my ability, like what we were talking about a minute ago, that judging and looking outside for not only our answers, but for a way to get away from looking inside, that keeps us from it.
Okay.
And if we're able to relax enough, like relax our minds enough, we can fall into these things more gently. You know, that's really what keeps us from falling in or allowing what's really there anyway.
Okay. You now you talk a lot about energy, other energy as well. And you say that fear and love are energy. How so?
Fear and love. So everything. Everything is energy. It's all a matter of consciousness, and consciousness is energy. So I want to use an example. So I'll use the example of money. And it really points to something else that's very near and dear to my heart. Money is energy. And when we exchange money the way we do now, it really is mostly exchanged with the energy of fear. Like there's not enough. If I'm handing this away, how much do I have? There are people out there that want it really bad because they're afraid they need more. And how energy is, money is moved around on our planet right now is really infused with this energy of fear. And fear is the energy of our thoughts and our desires and our I keep going back to fears. So it's infused, all these thoughts, fearful thoughts are infused in money and then moved around. And I have this, how I discovered this for myself, kind of the fear, love energy in money, is that I started this tithing practice and I read she had a little bit in her book, this tiny little paragraph about how she does this kind of, she calls it spontaneous tithing. And her name is Edwin Gaines, a wonderful little book called, oh shoot, I'm so sorry, I can't remember the name right now. But I'm trying to remember the title, but I don't. I apologize. But Edwin All right. Gaines, look her up. I think it's one of her only books. Anyway, so she has a tithing practice, and traditional tithing is you give 10% to your spiritual food, and that usually is your church or your community or something like that. And this spontaneous tithing is you take some amount of money, cash money, and you keep it with you, and when you find something that touches, moves, or inspires you that someone else did, like out in the world when you're just kind of doing your thing, you hand them money and you let them know why you're giving it to them, what you saw them do that inspired you. So I've gone out and done this. You know, I carry, you know, and you can do it with a dollar bill. You can do it, but I carry around 20s because it's a stretch for me. Just to hand somebody 20s is like a stretch for me because that's real money. And I go, wow, you know, like how many 20s can I hand out before I'm uncomfortable? Do you know?
Right.
So I, you know, I see people do something. So there was a man in a restaurant, and this happens all the time. But one example is there was a man in a restaurant and the waiter poured water on him. And, you know, you could freak out and get kind of upset. But this man was so kind, so gentle. And you could see it was this really sincere, just compassion that he had for this waiter. And the waiter was very upset and very, you know, remorseful, and just kept saying, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And the man put his hand on the waiter's shoulder, and he goes, "You know, it's just fine. Don't relax. Don't worry about it." And just the way he did this just touched me so deeply. And I walked over to him after the whole situation was over, and I handed him the $20 bill, and I said to him, this is my tithing practice. I let him know that when I see something that touches, moves, or inspires me, I show my appreciation for that by giving money. And I want you to accept this because, and I explained to him why. And the man, like, tears came to his eyes. It was one, and again, every time it happens, but this was one of the first ones, it is such a moving experience, and that is the energy of love moving in this piece of paper called money.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that, you talked a little bit about that in the book, and I thought it was really interesting, and it's a new way of looking at tithing. And tithing is just a word, really. It's a way of connecting with people.
Yes.
I just thought it was a great thing that you talked about in the book and what you're doing, and it's clearly something that I'm going to consider looking into for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, when you talked about fear and love, you know, and energy, you know, I kind of looked at it. The perspective is we live in an energy field, and you talked about that with the Kundalini energy and the chi and such like that, and I think what happens is that we live in this field, and our thoughts focus the field, and it focuses the energy, and that's why we create the world we live in, and love is a positive focus for that energy. And fear is a negative focus for the energy, and I think that's where a lot of it comes from, and how it interacts with us.
And I love the way you put it, because that's exactly what happens with the tithing experience or moving money the other way. Because really, when I'm doing that tithing experience, my attention is focused on truly love, what touch, moves, and inspires me. So I'm always looking for it, which is then creating my world.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's really neat. Now, you also said that, you know, some energies support evolution and others detract from evolution. And we need to pay attention to energies which motivate us. Mm-hmm. So when you say that, we can be motivated in negative ways, I guess, but I guess what you're saying is that the positive things that get us out to do things, those are the things that will support our evolutionary progress. Is that what you're saying?
Well, again, we're motivated by negative things all the time, you know, mostly, honestly. And, right. What I think the part you're talking about in the book is that even when you think you're being motivated positively, like if you're seeing someone on the street that needs help and you're wanting to do something to support them, if your intention is to get this person off the street because they're suffering, then really what you're doing is putting your attention into suffering. If your intention, it's really then to, I mean, this is very subtle, but so important. If you're trying to help this person to have a better life, do you see the difference in the subtlety of your motivation? One is to have a better life, and one is to stop suffering. So really to look at where the focus of that motivation is creates either more suffering. And again, it's subtle. So we want, you know, people to go out and support helping everyone. But but to look at whether you're trying to stop suffering or are you trying to support more life, wonderful life.
Yeah, you say in a book, when we worry about other people's suffering, it causes us to suffer, and we bring down the planet's vibration, which is I think what we're saying here, you're saying here, is that if you try to help other people, don't worry about their suffering. I mean, help them with it, but don't suffer because of it. So, you know,
and don't even hold suffering. Again, we're taught to look for the worst possible scenario. Again, it's kind of what we do. Right. So it's like we're looking. And again, there's a distinction here that I really love. And it's the distinction between do want and don't want. It's most of us look at what we don't want. We don't want that person to suffer. But what do we want? So if we shift just that simple bit from don't want to do want. So what, instead of, and pay attention when you're out in the world, how often you go, I don't want this, I don't want that. And just shift to what, and then when you catch yourself, just go, what do I want? And if, you know, there's someone that looks like they're suffering, you don't want them to suffering, just shift to what you do want. I want them to have a beautiful life. And do you see how it just changes the whole energy?
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We very rarely think about what we do want in life. We're really focused on, well, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want to get cancer. I don't want to do this and that. And we end up focusing on that. You talk about karma, and I like some of the things you say. You say that there is no such thing as karma between people. You say that karma is simply a stagnant energy which is attached to us and needs to be moved away from us. You know, and a lot of times, well, you know, some people believe in karma, some people don't. I of course do, but karma, you know, we look at as boy, you know, I must have a bad relationship with that person in a past life because you know. But what you're saying is that that's not true. It doesn't exist. Karma is just within us, and I think that's a really interesting way to look at it.
So, is there a particular question? Because there's so much about that.
Tell me a little bit about that. Is that how you view karma? I mean, how do you view karma?
Well, you know, it's funny because I viewed karma before I spoke with God about it. You know, you said in the beginning that I started interviewing God. Well, you know, how can you not, right? I have this like source of information and I'm like, I want to know from you. So in the book, honestly, these things that came through me because of questions I asked, I'm still living into, do you know? So when you say, do I believe it? I'm still checking it out. Do you know?
I know completely. You haven't chalked it off, but you haven't bought it off. So you just kind of put it over on the side and you say, okay, I'm going to deal with this. And then you look at other aspects of it and you try to get your mind around those various pieces of information. I do it all the time. So
because
I understand
honestly, you can't know these things. I can't know them. Do you know, like as I have a very, it's so interesting. I'm interesting to me anyway. I have a very intellectual mind, like my mind works very well. And at the same time, I'm such a feeler. Do you know, usually I see people that are like more strongly one or the other. And I am this like crazy, like it makes me crazy sometimes, this mix of the two. So I have this mind that goes, prove it to me, you know, and at the same time, I like feel the truth in things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in relation to this whole idea of karma, I mean, it made a lot of sense to me. What I did know about karma is very much how I heard you talk about it. It's what I heard, and it made sense to me. You know, we came into each life, and we did things in past lives, and we brought, you know, those lessons into these lives, and we can work them through if we choose to, you know, those kinds of traditional karma ideas. And when I asked God about it, and I want to be clear about this whole idea of talking to God, because we can all do it. So I want to just promote that idea. Or you can have these kinds of conversations with the collective mind is really, you know, all that is. Anything you call it, it's a very simple process to have direct connection with God or whatever you want to call it. So you don't have to believe me or anyone else. You can go and have these conversations for yourself. So I just wanted to promote that idea.
How do you have conversations? You know, how do you get started on something like that?
So the process I use, there's many different kinds of ways you can do this, but one of the processes I use that is so simple. When I found it, I was so grateful. It's the same thing that Neil Donald Walsh does with conversations with God. I learned it from a guy named Tim Kelly, and what it is a Jungian process modified a bit, and psychologists use it where you can talk to people who have died that you didn't complete things with. All you do, and it's so simple and I love it, all you do is figure out a name for whatever you're going to call this source of information that you believe. If you believe there's a subconscious mind, you can call it your subconscious mind. So it's that broad ranging. And all you do is figure out a name you're going to call this source of information, and I pick God, and you write your name, Beth, and you write colon, and you ask a question, and you do it all in writing. And one of the reasons I like this idea of writing it down is first you capture it, and second, there's kind of this mind-body experience that happens. So you're not so focused all in your head, and your head can wander. So you're writing it so that you're allowing what's flowing through you to come out on the paper. It's quite lovely. And it works for about 85% of the population, I hear. So definitely try it if you're listening. So you write your name, you write a colon, and you ask a question. And it can be anything. And then you write whatever name you came up for the source. You can write God, and you write a colon, and you let that source answer the question. And you just write down what comes. Now, what prevents most people from getting answers if you're stuck is that believing that it's true. So you do your best to let that go, and you just write what comes. Don't even worry about, you know, whether it's true or not true. Just write what comes. And I have been teaching people this process, and they get the most profound answers. I mean, like, they blow me away, the answers they get, you know? So it's really that simple. And what I suggest and what I did, again, I have this skeptical mind, is when I become skeptical or I have doubts, I ask about that. Like I've asked, you know, so what, why is this just not my imagination talking? Who is this really? And then let it answer. And it's just extraordinary. So thanks for letting me tell people how to do that.
Well I'll tell you, I'm unlike you, I am a seeker. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I take a little different perspective. When I see something, I try to search it out and try to figure it out. And you try to figure it out too. You mm-hmm. just maybe a slightly different perspective. But anyway, when the things that were coming through you and you put in the book, when you were interviewing God, I found an awful lot of those really profound. Mm-hmm. And they were, and I kind of had the feeling when reading the book is that you weren't convinced that some of this stuff was right or wrong, at least at that point in your life. But a lot of it I had found to be true from other things that I had looked at in years that I had years and years of looking and searching for things. And I thought it was absolutely fascinating. And then there were some other things that you came up with that I hadn't dealt with yet, and because I hadn't thought about them, so I thought it was amazingly profound that you were able to pull this information out of something that I wasn't sure you were ready to do, but you know what? So I'm not sure where the information was coming from, except for, you know, might well be coming from a spiritual source that was very, very real. So I was kind of blown away by the whole thing, quite frankly. I thought it was really, really interesting, the whole process.
Cool.
Yeah.
You can try it for yourself.
I probably will. Although if I find that the spiritual world is start giving me answers, I'll be a pain in the neck because I have so many to ask them.
I'm telling you, you'll only be greeted with answers.
With answers, yeah.
Happy to answer is what I've found.
Yeah. You know, now one of the things that that came out of that is, you know, people always want to know how to make the best decisions. Mm-hmm. And you say that our initial feelings are always correct. And when our and this is part of the when you were interviewing God, and when our physical mind takes over and tries to analyze the situation, then that's when we make poor judgments. Mm-hmm. We should feel more than we think, and the right path is easier to find by feeling or sensing the answers rather than logically working them out. Have you gone through and thought that one out a little bit? And
you know, I live that one. So, yes, I have. And I'm so glad you asked because I was just actually talking about it with a client last night. And what we do, because we are taught that our mind is the highest authority, our mind and other people's minds. Again, you know, we look outside ourselves so often for authority. But our mind has really taken over the reins of decision making, and it is not what it was designed to do. Now, our minds, or our ego mind, or, you know, whatever you call that realm, is essential, and you don't want to get rid of it. But because it's part of the creation process. You couldn't do without it. And, you know, the ego itself is part of the protection process. You know, you don't want to, you know, walk into a street with cars coming. So both those things are good things. So you don't want to get rid of them. But at the same time, we are designed with, and this has just started coming through me, this three parts. I'm calling it the freedom channels. And it's really three access points to inner guidance. Again, inner guidance is where our best decisions come from, not from our mind alone. So this idea of starting to feel and the mind part, what I suggest you do, again, it's got to quiet down enough so you can start feeling more. And like I said in the book, this this area of making decisions from feeling can't happen until the mind quiets down enough. So there's all kinds of things you can do with the mind to quiet it down enough, give it really productive things to do while you start reconnecting with this feeling sense.
Wait a minute. You got to explain this to me.
Yeah,
you're giving it productive things to do. Sounds like how do you quiet it when you're giving it productive things to do?
Well, that is this whole area. My husband and I for many years have been developing these workshops and seminars and online courses and all kinds of things. And these are some of the things, like even that one distinction that I gave you, do want versus don't want. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is to give the mind a different way of looking at things. So it has a different choice than it had before. So most of us aren't even aware that we spend all our time looking for what we don't want. But when it becomes aware that there's a difference between what you don't want and what you do want, then it goes, oh, wait, let's start playing. The mind just wants to work, you know, it's a little workhorse.
Right.
So when you give it something, okay, start looking for what you do want. It starts looking for that. So that's a more productive thing for it to do. So in the courses we teach, there are 37 different distinctions in order to have the mind go, oh, yes, I was doing this and that's not working very well. And oh, my God, look, I have a choice and I can do something different. So it's giving it something much more positive, much more productive to do. Does that make sense?
It does to a certain extent. Give me another example as opposed to the, the do
you
and don't.
Yeah. So another one of the distinctions, is the difference between, values or intention and strategies. So most of us spend all our time, you know, so many of our clients come to us and go, we just don't have the same values. We just don't have the same values. And we tell them that that's not true. You do, because we all, if you talk to people really about values, which people don't get down to, they get up to strategies. So what they're fighting are their strategies, the way in which they're going to experience what they value. That's what they have in conflict. So if, say, there's a couple and they're fighting over a new car, say, and the one of them wants this really exciting new race car, you know, or a sports car. And the other person is like, we don't need a sports car. And they're saying, you know, we just don't connect. You know, we're not connecting, you know. But if you get underneath to why do you want this sports car, to the values. So it may be, you know, acknowledgement. It may be like excitement or adventure, like the person that wants the sports car. But once you get underneath it, you can come up with different strategies to experience it that both people can be satisfied with. Does this make sense at all?
Yeah,
I wasn't prepared to give you, you know, these kinds of examples, so I'm just kind of off the top of my head. But so once you get underneath, then there's a way to talk about these things, because both people can understand acknowledgement, and they can understand it like excitement or adventure. They may not have the same strategies to get those things, but at some level they can appreciate it. And so once you get down there, you begin to have compassion for these ideas the person's having, and then you can start the negotiation process, which then different strategies pop up that both people can appreciate.
Yeah.
So that's, again, another way that the mind can relax, because then the mind isn't going, you can't have that car. And then you're just stuck there. And the mind is there. That's where the mind lives then.
Right. Well, what you're basically saying is you're finding a common ground, and then you can work from there.
Yes. And when you can distinguish these things, you can find a common ground. Before they're distinguished, before you know there's a choice, there is no common ground. You just think you just have that choice about fighting about strategies.
Yeah.
But they have no other choice until you can see it. So that's the work my husband and I do, is distinguishing all these things so that the mind can have a different choice. And then when it has a different choice, it can relax and start playing in this realm of more comfort, like these ways that are much more productive and positive and getting us all much more of what we want.
Yeah.
So once we're able to do that, then we can drop into our natural selves, which we are supposed to be connected to our physical inner guidance. We have inner guidance at a physical level. So just kind of back to that question, because I just love it, is that my belief from my exploration in this area, and it's been full, do you know, from mm-hmm. in my own testing laboratory, which I call my life, is that we always know what there is to do next, but we hesitate, we doubt, we, you know, freak out because we don't like the consequences or fear of those consequences our mind is telling us. So when we can relax the mind and start feeling our way through life, that the next step, that decision that needs to be made, really just arises, and we get that it's just our next step. It becomes less of a struggle to make decisions, and we know it's just our next step.
And that comes from inside, and that could come from our subconscious, or it could come from the spiritual world giving us guidance, and it just, but it comes from inside. People don't have to tell us, and that's what you're saying, right?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let me, and I was going to ask you to summarize quickly. Let me summarize what, you know, quickly for you, and then you tell me what to add and subtract from what I say. Say, we live in a world of suffering, but no one needs to suffer. Suffering is a choice we inadvertently make. We are all always connected to the all that is, or God, and we are cared for and are protected by that power, even though we don't know it. We can eliminate our suffering and help others eliminate their suffering at the same time by, one, trusting that we will be taken care of; two, stop judging both ourselves and others, which we can do by always staying positive; and three, loving ourselves and others unconditionally. Add and subtract quickly.
No. Wow, that was great. I love that. You know, I think more than anything that what I'm saying is to start looking within yourself for everything, all the answers, all the love, all the things you're looking for. And when you start finding them within yourself, you will start seeing them everywhere in the world, everywhere.
Okay, that's great. How can people get in touch with you, find out what you're doing, and maybe take some of these seminars and courses that you're giving?
The easiest way at this point is you can go to BethBanning.com, and my book is there. I'm doing something because of this whole area of inner guidance is so important to me. I believe that once we're all connected to our inner guidance, we will not have what we're seeing in the world now that we're not liking. So I'm doing a 3-part video series on the Freedom Channels, which are the 3 access points to your inner guidance. And what I'm doing is I'm giving it away free with the purchase of my book. So if you go and buy my book at this point, if you buy it anywhere, and you send me an email at beth@bethbanning.com, I'll put you on the list. And as soon as the video series is done, you're going to get it free. So it's all different kinds of exercises, just what you were asking me. But there'll be exercises for each one of the access points to your inner guidance. So you can start really getting connected and fully embody spirit on earth. That's really what I'm after, is the idea of really being that I believe is the true spiritual leap, and the next level of evolution is us all getting connected to our inner guides.
Beth, you've been a great guest. I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for being
You're
with
so me. You're so welcome.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. You can contact me through my website at davidgagan.com. I hope to hear from you in regards to today's show and ideas for future topics. Also, I cover all these subjects and a lot more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.